Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
I've never felt like this before. It's like you just get me. I feel like my true self with you. Does that sound crazy? And it doesn't hurt that you're gorgeous. Okay, that's it. I'm taking you home with me. I mean, you can't find shoes this good just anywhere. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at your DSW store or DSW.com.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
All right, there it is. 7:30 on a Wednesday. DX playing. It is the walkout music of our guest at this time. Joins us fairly frequently throughout the year, and we always enjoy chatting, especially right after the draft and right before the rookies get here. Always good to catch up with Texans Executive Vice President and General Manager Nick Caserio. Nick, good morning. How are you?
Morning, fellas. Thanks for having us. Congratulations to my good friend Triple H on his induction.
Yeah,
on the heels of his music. There, that's great.
I don't know if you got to see his speech because it was happening, you know, during draft season there, and it took an hour and 10 minutes. I don't know if you get an hour and 10 minutes to do extracurricular stuff like that.
I saw him walk out and spray the water everywhere, so yeah. It was pretty much on brand. So it's about the extent of it. So there'll be an off-season study. I'll get to it eventually.
There you go. Yeah, I'll send you all the links to all the YouTubes and everything. You'll be good. You'll be good to go. How you feeling? How are we feeling post-draft and pre the rookies getting here? Are they in town yet, the rookies?
They'll be on their way, I want to say, tomorrow at some point. So they'll travel tomorrow, be here Friday, Saturday. Sunday will probably be pretty light. And then they'll kind of transition with the rest of the team here on Monday as we work through phase two. So more than anything, these couple days, these upcoming, will be more of an introduction, just kind of give them a foundation, just kind of focus on the players that we have, our drafted players, undrafted players. Don't really have too many like tryout type players, so just try to focus on our players, kind of get them up to speed. So excited to get them in the building, excited to get started. Some of these players have been on their own working. I think there was a clip or a picture, I think Mertz, Jackson, and Noel were working out together because they're all from Kansas City. They all had helmets on. It looked like they had like Hutch helmets on. They didn't have any pads, so it was like when they were growing up when you put those oversized helmets on. But they're working. They've had contact with the coaches. They've had Zoom, so they're just trying to get up to speed relative to the information from a football standpoint. So excited to get him in the building, excited to get started.
Yeah, does this feel like a rookie class? You guys, you and D'Amico make, you know, such a prominent thing that the culture in there, the love of football, all those things. Does this feel like a rookie class to you that's going to fit right in, like hand in glove with the guys you've got in the building already? Or is that something that you need to kind of ascertain over time here?
Yeah, we'll have a better sense when they walk in the building, but we feel the worker ethic mindset, their competitive drive, their competitive nature, they possess the qualities that we covet in players. I think all teams really kind of covet some of those qualities in players. So I think the focus is on football, is trying to improve as a football player, understanding like they have to come in and earn their opportunity and with their work and with their effort. So come in, forget about everything else, and just go to work, which is what a lot of these players have done over the course of their career. So we're not going to ask them to do anything that they haven't done or not accustomed to doing, but they just have to understand what it means to do it within the context of our building and our football team, understanding that we feel we're going to have a competitive team, so they're going to have to earn their opportunity with their performance, and that comes with what they do on a day-to-day basis.
Nick, you talked about, I think it was after night one, that you know, there were some things that happened in the draft that you expected that maybe the public at large or the mock drafts weren't predicting. Was there anything about the draft this year that was kind of a surprise to you, various position groups or anything that went way maybe higher or lower than you expected?
I wouldn't say big surprise, Seth. I think more than anything, sometimes, and we've talked about this, I mean, mock draft, I mean, you guys know how I feel about mock drafts and, you know, post-draft grades and all that other nonsense. But really, the mock drafts are about positioning where a player potentially is going to fall relative to a range. I would say in some cases they were really out of whack, and then all of a sudden you have this like mad dash 2 to 3 days before. Well, all of a sudden this guy's like moving up the board, or his positioning has changed. And we actually kind of anticipated, I'd say, the first 10 to 15 coming off, not coming off exactly the way that they came off, but having some understanding of the group of players that we expected. So, and then again, as the draft go, if you work, as you work yourself through the draft, so players come off, it's really a case by case, and it's very team specific. And then players are taking, you know, they're drafting players and taking the players that they covet, that they want to add to their team. And eventually it's going to kind of thin itself out, and then you're drafting like a different level of players. So we've talked about this. I've talked about this just relative to a range of players or grouping of players at a certain level, and where they kind of fall on the board, where they fit relative to their grade. So not necessarily anything surprising. I mean, we try not to get too caught up in the ebbs and flows of the draft. I think we try to maintain as much flexibility, adaptability, and it's very fluid. Understanding players are going to come off. There's going to be certain players. If you have three or four, you might lose all three. When if you lose them, what's the next alternative? And you just kind of keep it moving. So try not to get too high. Try not to get too low. Adapt to the circumstances as you go. And, you know, we felt that that's kind of the how those 3 days went.
Is there a part of that, though, too, where, okay, you know, you said you felt like you had a pretty good feel for the top 15, and obviously there's players that we've talked about a lot that went in the top 15. Is there a part of you where before the draft and you're trying to monitor kind of what all the scuttlebutt is, that you're like, all right, well, we think this guy should go in the top 15, but there's... But there looks like there might be a chance he doesn't go. Is there a little bit of extra eyebrow raised on some of those guys?
You're always prepared. So, again, you don't know exactly how it's going to go for anybody, for me or anybody to sit here and tell you, like, okay, this is exactly how it's going to go. I mean, they'd be lying to you. So it's just more having an understanding of the players, having an understanding of the value, just having a general understanding of the ballpark of where they're going to situate and fall. And if the player is there at a certain level, you feel comfortable with them, you take them. If you don't, if he's not there, then you move on to the next cohort of players. So with
Tyler Booker, and now we don't even have to talk about, you know, whether you guys like Tyler Booker or anything. And I don't, you know, now that he's a player on another team, however much you're allowed to talk about him, like, he's a guy that was, you know, for a long time people were saying, oh, look at this guy, he's going to be a mid first round pick. Then he has a poor combine performance. At what point, with a player like that, obviously the Cowboys, who have drafted really well in general over the past several years, like, is there a point where you just say, all right, like the film is the film, and we've watched him do it for a while, and we just, do you throw the combine results completely out and just stand on your evaluation?
Yeah, you know this, Seth. Between February and the draft, like, what actually happens that changes a player's quote-unquote value or statue, other than everybody's talking about it, everybody's got an opinion, and then they kind of get shuffled around. So at times there's a lot of noise, which you have to be somewhat disciplined to block out the noise. How a player performs and he plays and his body of work, that's going to be the bulk of the assessment. So you have the physical evaluation of the player, what they do on the field. Really, a player is not going to move up or down the board because of a 15-minute combine interview or, you know, a 2-minute combine workout, at least from our perspective. Other teams may feel differently, and there's 32 different teams, and they go about it however they feel appropriate. So focus on the player, focus on their performance, focus on their production. What are some of the things that they do well? What are some of the areas they can improve? If a player has a deficiency, can we improve that? If the player does have a deficiency, then it goes back to their mindset. Do they have the desire to get better? Do they want to take coaching? Do they want to improve? Are they focused on football? Or are they focused on a lot of other things that really don't matter? So, again, you have to be careful not to let one particular thing outside of the film sway your decision. You evaluate the players. You grade the players. You gather information. You assign a grade. You go back and forth. at some point.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America, for America.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
Ring the bell. Golden Oak Lending has lowered rates. Lower your mortgage payment, get cash out, or pay off credit cards. Visit goldenoaklending.com today.
Golden Oak Lending, cured my blues.
NMLS 114937.
Hey everyone, summer is just around the corner and May's packed with reasons to celebrate. Whether you're firing up the grill for a backyard barbecue, soaking up the sun by the pool, or enjoying a long weekend with friends and family, Whole Foods Market makes it easy to kick off the season with great everyday prices on high quality favorites, from fresh produce to grilling essentials. Let's dive into the savings and get your summer fun started right. Personally, I love how easy Whole Foods Market makes it to pull together a last-minute gathering. I was there recently picking up a few things for a cookout, and those yellow low-price signs are no joke. I grabbed their No Antibiotics Ever Ground Turkey and a few 365 by Whole Foods Market Organic Salad Kits. Honestly, so convenient and surprisingly affordable. The quality is still everything you'd expect, but I definitely felt like I was scoring a deal, which I love. Plus those yellow sale signs, I make a beeline for them now. Especially when I saw strawberries on sale, we went through 2 cartons in one day. Save on May celebrations with great everyday prices at Whole Foods Market.
Whenever that is, when you kind of put a player to bed, you're comfortable with what you think the profile of the player is, and then you move on to the next group of players that we have to find out more information on. Maybe they have something outstanding. Maybe they have a personal situation that has some extenuating circumstances that could affect some things. Those are the things that you try to focus on. The combine's the combine. The testing. Everybody gets a data point. Okay, the guy ran fast. All right, great. He ran slow. Okay, he didn't jump high enough. Again, how do you weigh that in your overall, I would say, evaluation process? Some have more weight than others. Again, it all goes back to, like, what's your philosophy? What do you believe in? What do you prioritize? And then ultimately, that's what drives you to your end decision.
Nick Caserio, Texans GM, joining us here on Payne and Pendergast. Nick, just another thing on the draft, but a specific thing with the move you guys made to move out of the first round. People make a big deal out of, okay, these are the extra picks they got for moving back. You get the 2 extra 3s. How important was it for you to not move too far back, though? I mean, we saw a trade right after you at the 26th pick between the Rams and the Falcons, where the Rams moved down into the 40 somewhere, but they pick up an extra first. How important was it for you with that specific deal to not move too far back, because you end up getting Jaden Higgins in that deal?
Yeah, Sean, that's a good point. I think you have to be careful of whenever you move out of a pick. A, how far back are you going? And then B, it's a product of what are you looking at on the board? So at some point, you're going to lose X number of players. So either A, you have to be comfortable with that, or B, if you do move back off of, let's call it 15 to 20 picks, do you have the ability to get into a spot, maybe move up 5 or 10 spots to get back in a range that can give you an opportunity to maybe pick a group of players that you otherwise would lose out on? I would say an example of that was, so we moved off of 25, went to 34, which we felt was a reasonable spot. It wasn't quite as far as we moved last year when we did the trade with Minnesota, which was done before the draft, when we moved kind of in the mid to low, I think it was 22. We ended up going back to 42. So, all right, there's 15 to 20 players. And I would say, you know, last year going back on that, like we were comfortable in the 40s. Could we have moved up a little bit? Sure. I think we tried to move up a little bit, but in the end, we ended up picking Kamari, who we were probably going to pick anyways. So sometimes it kind of works itself out. I would say even in this draft, so when you look at, so we move off at 25, go to 34. We felt we were going to pick at 34, and then we were able to kind of get a little flexibility, the extra third. But we did have a little bit of a gap from 34 to whatever it was, 65, or whatever that pick was in the third round. Mm-hmm. So then as we were evaluating it, we had acquired that extra third-round pick with the Giants trade, and then we were able to move kind of in that 48, 49, 50 range, kind of that mid-second-round range, because we felt that was probably a decent range where we could get a player, like, as an example, Ursary. And then in the third round, so then you pick, all right, then you have a gap. If you picked at 34, then your next pick is in the 60s or 70s. It's 25, 30 players, so how many players are you going to lose? What's the next sort of break point? So there, that just goes back to there's an ebb and flow of the draft. So you make a trade, you know where you're positioned. Then it's you flip the page to what's the next move?
Yeah.
Do you want to move back in? Do you want to move up? Are we comfortable sitting where we are? If we sit, here's what's going to happen. Which I would say, not to get too far ahead here, but I would say that was part of the rationale with the Woody Marks pick. Once we picked on Friday, we didn't have a fourth or fifth round pick, and there was a certain group of players, I would say, that we had graded, and the likelihood of them probably making it to the sixth round or wherever our first pick was in the sixth more than likely was not going to happen. So we had discussions, said, look, we have an opportunity to go back into the fourth round to get to a certain level. Is it worth doing? And then once we made a decision it was worth doing, then we gave up the future third, which we'd acquired from the Giants trade. The couple days earlier, which a future third is really present value of a fourth. So then you're asking yourself, would we pick this player in the fourth round of this year's draft? And I think the answer was yes. So that's why we were ended up making the trade to move back into the fourth round and then pick Woody. So just goes, that's the ebb and flow of the draft. Yeah. And you guys have followed us enough to know we'll pretty much do anything. We're open-minded and things move pretty quickly, and you just, if you know the players, you know the board kind of top to bottom, if you have some conviction, then you go ahead and make the decision and then pick the player and then move on to the next opportunity, whatever that is.
You said after the first night of the draft, someone asked you in that press conference if there was still a player on the board that you were considering at 25. Is there still somebody there after the first round that you were considering at 25 when you made that trade? Is it fair to assume that Jaden Higgins was the one player that you volunteered there, that you cited that, yeah, there was one guy?
There were some players, I think, that we probably would have picked in the first round. So Seth Payne was probably one of those players as well.
That's right.
If he were on the board. We had his card up there pretty high. So.
Okay. Yeah.
But
yeah.
I'd say Jaden was a Jaden was a player that
back
we liked
in time, I know. Yeah.
Pretty consistently throughout the process. Yeah. So. But there were certain players that we would have felt comfortable taking at 25 or at some point in the first round and vice versa in the second round as well.
Yeah.
Nick, I'm sorry. I was just thinking about my
draft. I know, he's flustered now.
I got a flashback to my draft. No, I was going to tell you. No, Nick, I've told you many times of like various ways that I screwed up the draft process. But the dumbest thing I ever did was when I was visiting Jacksonville, they told me they really liked Ronaldo Wynn. And I knew Ronaldo.
Yeah, sure.
Defensive,
sure.
You know, yeah. And there's like, hey, we really like him, but you know, if we don't get him, we'll go. You know, we might take him in the first round. If we don't like him, if he's not there, then you know, we might go ahead and take you. In my dumb mind as a kid, I thought that they were telling me they were going to draft me in the first round. If Ronaldo Wynn wasn't there.
That's how I would have heard it.
Yeah. Luckily, my agent was very,
that would
very
be
smart.
My interpretation as well. Yeah. If that's what they said to me.
Basically, what they meant was, and they ended up drafting Ronaldo in the first round. They drafted me in the fourth round. I was very insulted.
You were close.
Yeah. No, my agent, Ralph Sindrich, set me straight. He's like, no.
I like Ralph. Listen. Ralph's a good agent.
That's great.
You ain't no first-round pick, son.
All right, Nick, I got to ask you this. What was your reaction of all the draft picks that you pick up the phone and you call, when you call Jalen Reed in the sixth round and you're just getting hit with a barrage of this right here, like this, and again, Ben, hit it again, and again, and again, and again. Were you hearing him scream, let's do it, that whole time? Or were you just, that was a wild phone call.
Yeah, no, I was trying to just introduce him. Hey, excited to have you here. And I couldn't talk, so kind of let him have his day in the limelight. He was excited. So at least he didn't say, let's effing go. And then we had that recorded. And so, then we would have had a bigger issue.
Yeah, but, social media so. Team's like, ah, yeah.
A lot of energy, very excited, and that's kind of his personality. That's how he plays. So, but that was a fun, that was a fun moment.
Oh yeah, for sure, for sure. Texans GM Nick Caserio joining us here on the program this morning. All right, Nick. So, circling back to the current group of guys, and obviously a lot of change on the offensive line, a lot of churn there. When it comes to Titus Howard, do we know yet? Is he going to be playing tackle or guard? And is that a decision that needs to be made before heading into training camp? Or is that something you can actually kind of mix and match? I mean, those are two very different positions, obviously. Where are we at with that with Titus right now?
Yeah, I think you have to look at each case individually. And in the spring is different than training camp, you know, when you're actually on a field. So I think the spring is an opportunity, whatever you're going to do, whether it's something schematically, whether it's something personnel-wise, to give them an opportunity, maybe experiment with something a little bit different. I would say specific to Titus, that's an example of a player that he's actually shown that he can play at a good level at either spot. So there is sort of an innate level of versatility. I think sometimes that term is used a little, I would say not carelessly or freely, but that the assumption is a player just has position versatility because of A, certain measurables, or B, should be able to do it. But if you've actually never seen him do it, it's hard to make that extrapolation and to make that assessment. And you're really not going to know with that player until you actually get into training camp, because it's a little bit of a dynamic. But I would say in our situation, we feel like we have a number of players that will be able to compete in the offensive line. And we have certain levels of players or certain grouping of players. You have sort of tackle-only group. You have tackles that can play guard. And I would say in Titus's case, he's proven that he can do that. On the inside part of the line, you have players that are center only. You have players that are guard only. You have players that can play all three inside spots. So what we're trying to do is build up as much depth and versatility, like legit versatility, not just on a piece of paper, you're going to pencil something in, this guy can do multiple things. Well, A, if you've never seen him do it, it's hard to make that assessment. But then B, if you do give him the opportunity, maybe you'll have a little bit more information so that if you are forced to move some players around, then you have a little bit more of a comfort level. So we're sort of in the infantile stages. Yesterday was the first day on the field of actually individualized work. And then once we transition to phase three, when we practice, we'll have different, you know, I would say combinations of players, and the same thing in training camp, all to arrive sort of at the same end point. Who are the five best guys that we feel most comfortable with? We're going to have eight players at the game more than likely. So you're going to have your five starters and then your three backups. You're going to have a next tackle. You're going to have a next inside player. And then you're going to have an extra player. And then what do you do if you lose a tackle? Who goes to that spot? Do you put the third tackle in the game? Do you move somebody from a different position? So there's different, but similar to draft, there's going to be a little bit of an ebb and flow here, and we'll get more information here as we work through the process.
Yeah, and that's another thing with the modern CBA or the current CBA. There's just not as much practice time. There's not as much practice time in pads as there used to be. If you take a guy like Ariante Ursary, who's only played left tackle in college, and you know, you get him into camp, like at what point do you feel comfortable in camp thinking, all right, well, this guy might be able to handle this without really being able to see him do that much work in pads? Like how do you make that leap from having a guy play just tackle or just left tackle to, okay, we're playing him left and right tackle, or, oh, hey, we might try him out at guard?
Yeah, you got to be careful with that, Seth. I think the first 2-3 weeks, you should have an understanding of, A, how it's going in whatever position that player is playing. I think one of the things you always have to be conscious of, you never want to put the player in a position that's not favorable to him. If you're asking a player to do something that he's never done before, where's that sort of line of demarcation of when you, A, introduce it, and then, B, how much work can you actually get done? Let's say, going back to, you know, my experience in New England, you know, we drafted Solder, you know, as the third tackle. It was trying to figure out. We had Light, and I think we had Sebastian Vollmer there as well, Houston Cougar. And it's like, all right, what do you do with Solder? You just try to fit him inside. Well, maybe that's not the best thing. I think he was like the jumbo tight end. And, you know, we went to kind of heavy personnel grouping and eventually he transitioned. You know, Light was another player when he was drafted. You know, he was a little bit undersized relative to tackle. So Bill, they moved him to right tackle, tried him inside. It wasn't really good at any of those spots. His best position ended up being left tackle. You know, Matt had a really good career, 10, 11 year career at left tackle. So you have to take the player. It's always case by case. Some can handle a little bit more than others, but you just want to make sure you're not putting the player in a position that's not favorable to them where they really can't accentuate their strengths and do what they do well. So I would say in Tay's case, and D'Amico mentioned this the other day, Tay's a tackle really until he's not. So I think the focus initially would be on tackle, and then we'll see kind of how we mix and match the rest of the group. Could that change? Possibly. I think the one thing you always have to be prepared for is just about anything. So sometimes you're forced to maybe make some decisions because you injuries or whatever else happens around you. But you want to be smart and you want to make sure you're making a good decision on behalf of the player.
You know, with Ursary, I came around on Ursary because of John Harris specifically. And it was because the first time I watched Ursary, I'm like, man, he's really tall and he doesn't, like, in my opinion, he didn't play with great knee bend. And I just didn't know about him. And then I talked to John Harris and I read some of the stuff he wrote and he was talking about his athleticism. So I went back and watched him again. And I realized, like, oh, yeah, he gets from point A to point B. He's doing a lot of really athletic stuff really, really well. And then when you guys drafted him, Daniel Jeremiah said, hey, some teams love him and look at him as a late first-round pick. Some other teams look at him as a third-round pick. Is part of that just simply because he's deceptively athletic? Like, are there some people that look at a guy like Ursary and think, like, oh, okay, no, that guy's just not, like, the type of – he's not a Laramie Tunsil type of fluid mover. And they're turned off by that versus other people that just look at it and say, yeah, but he gets the job done.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
How can advertising on TikTok help jumpstart sales for your small business?
Thanks to TikTok ads, I was able to open up a business with my childhood friend, get a warehouse, and even hire employees.
My name is Julian, and I am one of the founders of the Snacks Lab.
We are an exotic snack company. We had over $100,000 in sales from our TikTok ads in the first month. So our orders went from 5 a day to over 250 orders a day. You definitely have to use TikTok ads, and you gotta start now.
Head over to getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTok ads.
Optimize your nutrition this year with Factor, America's number one ready-to-eat meal service. Factor's fresh, never-frozen meals are dietitian-approved, ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from 40 weekly options across 8 dietary preferences like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Eat smarter at factormeals.com/listen50 and use code LISTEN50 for 50% off plus free shipping on your first box. Factormeals.com/listen50. Code LISTEN50.
If you don't know about flyer deals on Instacart, this message is for you. Flyer deals are like strolling through your favorite store looking for deals, but you're scrolling your phone and maybe you're in bed because getting delivery doesn't mean you have to miss deals like you get at the store, like the one creamer that doesn't make your stomach hurt or the pasta sauce you can't not buy when it's on sale. So download the Instacart app, shop flyers, and never miss a deal on one of your favorites. Plus, get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes.
All offensive linemen. Chester's probably going to come in this office and strangle me. But again, athleticism and offensive linemen, how you define that, I think
fluidity.
It's different. But yeah, I'd say a couple things you want to focus on. A, can they play on their feet? Do they have a certain degree of bend? Do they have the ability to move laterally and kind of stay in front of rushers regardless of the position? So not how fast do they run from point A to point B. Like, that's like, it's important, but it's really not, unless you're going to run some G scheme or crack scheme where they're pulling around. You get to see the guy run. But that didn't really happen a lot. And I would say in Ursary's case, I mean, here's a guy, how big he is, 6'5", 330, whatever he is. I mean, he actually ran 5 flat, which is like a decent time for an offensive lineman from point A to point B. But it's about, you're talking about functional athleticism as it pertains to, it's, everything's in a short space. So can you move laterally enough to stay in front and pass protection? And then really what you're looking for, their capacity to redirect. You know, if there's an outside rush and they cross face them, or they rip inside and then you got to get back to your inside hand, the ability to kind of stick your foot in the ground and react. So maybe if you're lacking a little bit of, I would say, lower body flexibility, maybe you're able to compensate that because you have a certain level of playing strength if you punch with your inside hand. So there's different ways to kind of evaluate that. But I say the big thing is, do they play on their feet? Do they stay in front of the defender? And then in a running game, their ability to move or displace people at the line of scrimmage, are they able to roll their hips on contact? So it's always going to be a little bit different. Sometimes beauty's in the eye of the beholder a little bit. I would say Laramie is kind of like, he's his own category. You have him, Trent Williams, like that level of athlete is pretty rare. So then you kind of take those players out of it. Then you're looking for a functional level of movement. And in the end, can you get the guy in front of you blocked? Like, that's the most important thing.
Nick Caserio, Texans GM, joining us on the program. You're listening to KLT and KLT. HD2 Houston, an Odyssey sports station. Nick, just circling back to the offensive line and the moving parts that you guys have, a lot of decisions to make there. And as you mentioned, a lot of guys that can play multiple positions. You're also installing a new offense, or at least there's a new offensive coordinator who's going to be installing his offense. How challenging is it to install a new offense while having all those moving parts going along, all that evaluation going on the offensive line?
Well, actually, there's some benefits because essentially everybody's kind of starting at the same ground level. Mm-hmm. So everybody's kind of starting from scratch. So it's a first opportunity for the players, whether it's the offensive line, the skill players, there's a certain level of transition. So this is what the spring is for. The focus is on system installation and the focus for the team. And D'Amico talked about this the other day. Like, phase two is really about mastering your fundamentals. Because in the end, everything is going to go back to your basic fundamentals and techniques. So if you can execute those things, I mean, not to like transition to a different sport, but essentially the Cavs lost the game last night because they couldn't block out after a free throw. Mm-hmm. So everybody wants to talk about all these other things, but in the end, it comes back to basic principles, blocking, tackling, fundamentals. Which is, that's what phase two, that's where the primary emphasis is. And the fact that we're all kind of starting at the same point, there's actually a lot of advantages. You don't have to worry about anything that's happened in the past. You don't have to worry about, well, we did it this way somewhere else on this different team. Well, we did it this way last year. None of that is really germane. What really matters is, where are we right now? What's the focus for the day? What's the emphasis point? What are the coaching points? So that's the job of the player to internalize that, to have an understanding, and then focus on your fundamentals. So when you have to apply those in critical situations, you have something that you can resort back to. So honestly, it's actually a positive, and hopefully we can take advantage of our opportunities here over the next 4 to 6 weeks, or however many we have.
Okay, you asked for it, Nick, in one of your press conferences during the draft. You requested a definition of drafting for need. So I did. I went to where I go for 90% of my sports takes these days, my hottest takes, I went to AI. So,
ChatGPT, or which mode are you using?
I'm using, I don't know, whichever one.
There's a lot of tools out there.
It costs me more per month than I should be paying. That's
$610 paying for that, or is that a
No. This is gem. Okay. This is why I have my YouTube channel specifically, so I can I have business expenses that I can write off. Okay. This is Gemini. This is what Gemini defines. And I'll be honest with you. Gemini sounds like they're kind of down on drafting for need. But the basic definition they give is When an NFL general manager drafts for need instead of best player available, it means they prioritize selecting a player who fills a specific positional weakness on their current roster, even if there's another player available with a higher overall talent grade according to their scouting evaluations.
That's Google's product out there, folks, just in case anybody's interested. I believe so.
The GM,
did you find
GM
that explanation useful?
No, I don't know because I don't even want to ask you the question because you've answered this a million times. I guess the biggest, if we were to kind of build on some of the answers you've given us and other people about this, it's and from talking to other people, kind of the way teams construct their boards. You've talked about how when you look at players, you do have to look at their role in the offense or in the defense, and that the way it's been explained to me before is that you're going best player available can also, it does have to include, all right, does this guy A, fit our scheme, and B, is there a place for him? But it's like, so you're not necessarily veering off of your board on draft day, but your board is going to look different than other teams' boards who already maybe have like three all-pro wide receivers. Is that fair?
Well, I would say even in that case, let's just say you have three all-pro receivers, you're not going to grade the player any differently as you would as if you didn't have that player. So I think tried to look at it is just if you're just starting from scratch, forget about the current composition of the team. Said player, here's the grade, here's the role that we potentially foresee for that player, and then you're comparing that to another position. At some point, you are going to work horizontally across the board, and then if you have to make a decision about equally graded level players, then ultimately you just have to make a choice about, you can only pick one, and you pick that player, and then you move on. So I'd say the current composition of your team doesn't necessarily affect the grade and the evaluation of that said player. Ultimately, then it comes down to the team's choice or decision about adding that player to your team. I would say just not looking at too many other teams, but in the case of, I would say, the Ravens, like there's an example of they probably took one of the best football players that was still on the board. He was more than likely their highest graded level player. They have Kyle, like they have a good secondary. Now, here's another player that is probably going to fit in fairly well. How they use him, how they deploy him, who knows? I mean, we'll find out because we're going to play Baltimore. But I would say, like, there's an example of, well, we have Kyle Hamilton. Do we draft Malachi Starks? If the goal is to try to build a good football team with good football players, understanding you're probably going to need everybody at some point in time, then you go ahead and make the decision. And again, I'm not like speaking on behalf of Eric,
right,
but I would just say when you look at that situation, that looks like an example of, man, that was the best football player that was on the board. So they were looking up there going, you know what? That makes a lot of sense. So let's add him to the team. And we have a lot of respect for the way the Ravens run their, I would say, organization and program. Buffalo, I would say, operates very similarly. So again, everybody probably has a little bit different philosophy, but I think there's been other general managers who have made comments probably similar to mine. And I don't think that's just lip service. I think that's the reality of it. And that's kind of, you have to be careful of if you draft a player because you just feel like, A, we have this gaping hole and we can't miss out, even though he's graded a little bit lower than another player. I mean, it's a tough way to operate.
You just got to, is it fair to say that the need is a tiebreaker at the very least? Like if you got like equally graded players, if you got those three all-pro wide receivers and there's a wide receiver and let's say you need a defensive end or, you really want pass rushers, you're going to take the pass rusher.
At some point you just have to make a decision what you feel makes the most sense for the team at the present time. So if there's a tiebreaker, maybe there's something that maybe leans it one way or the other. But I would say by and large, you're just take the player, take the evaluation. Do we have conviction? And is there, I would say, a little bit of a organizational conviction on the player? So it's top to bottom. It's just not what the coaches think. It's not what the scouts think. It's kind of a collective. Here's how we feel. We're comfortable with it. All right, ready, go, and then move on to the next player. So it's always kind of an interesting discussion, especially around draft time. So, free agency is kind of its own entity in that discussion and everything that goes on there. Then you get to the draft. It's all tied together. And ultimately, our goal is to try to make good, sound decisions that are the best for the organization and just try to fill the building with as many football players as possible. And then ultimately, once we get them in the building, we have zero control over it. The players are going to ultimately determine who plays, how big a role they have based on their performance.
Nick Caserio joining us on the show. Hey, Nick, along those lines, just sticking with wide receiver, from your standpoint in terms of roster building, how are you viewing Tank Dell right now? We know he's recovering from the injury and he's in good spirits, and it sounds like the surgeries have been very successful. But how are you viewing him in that, you know, that 2-year window that you talk about all the time?
Yeah, I mean, right now, no timetable. I think the focus is on his rehab. So whenever Tank, I think D'Amico was asked about this the other day as well, mm-hmm. and I mean, his comments are probably similar to mine. Like, whenever Tank is available and he's ready, then he's ready and he'll be out there. So Tank's a good football player. He's proven that he can help our team. So right now he's focused on his individual health and just doing the best he can on a day-to-day basis. And then when he's ready, you know, he'll be out there. Tank can certainly help us. He's proven that he can help us over the course of time. So, you know, kind of take it one day at a time and then just kind of evaluate and monitor his progress as we go. But he's been great to have around. He's got a great attitude. He's been a good player. So, you know, we'll kind of see how it goes moving forward.
What somebody had asked me a question about Jalen Noel the other day, and he asked how he compares to Wes Welker. So I went back up, and you know, I know you love the combine stats as much as I do. And I was
Wes is already mad at me after my comments the first night of the draft when I talked about I love Wes. So it was actually meant complimentary because I'd asked about size and I talked about Wes being 4'1".
Well, yeah, you said honestly, he's 4'1". Yeah.
Honestly, I'm looking at I like looking at these spider charts that show all the measurables, and Wes Welker went undrafted originally. And I'm looking at this, and if somebody had told me, oh, yeah, the Patriots traded a second and a seventh rounder for this guy with this athletic profile.
Lunatics.
Oh, my God.
Well, he didn't – if I don't have it in front of me, I think he ran like 4'7". He didn't run 4'7".
He has,
but
like,
his short space quickness, yeah. Lateral agility was actually an area that stood out, and you saw that in his play.
Yeah, yeah, and he was very, very small. And, like, so you look at Jalen Noel. Jalen Noel's a smaller guy, but he tested very well, and he's got all those measurables. I guess with Jalen Noel, how do you make up for, like Wes Welker did or anybody else, like, aside from the speed element? Like, Jalen Noel's got a smaller catch radius anatomically. So what's the difference for guys that make it in the NFL, like Jalen Noel, if he makes it?
There's no one particular formula, I would say. Seth.
Yeah, I guess specifically to Jalen Noel, like, what are the things other than the athleticism that make up for it?
Yeah, I would say his toughness, his overall instinctiveness, his playing style. He's got good speed, I would say, for his position. He ran a good time. So, I mean, again, sometimes the time speed and the game speed don't always match up. I would say in his particular case, he has good speed. You know, he has good time speed. So those two kind of marry up. He's got strong hands, even though he's smaller. He's not like that small. He's a pretty sturdy, I would say, rocky, kind of blocked up kind of dude. Honestly, his build is similar in some respects to Christian. They're not Christian Kirk. They're not small players. They might be quote-unquote shorter, but they're not necessarily small players. They might play big for their size. I would say, like, going back to my time in New England, like, Edelman played strong for his size. And Julian's not the biggest guy. So I'd say there's a certain level of playing strength. There's a certain level of instinctiveness. There's a certain level of toughness. I would say in Welker's case, nobody was tougher than Wes Welker, and he had very good instincts on the inside part of the field, and he kind of developed those over time, and he was a reliable catcher. And then Tom did a good job of putting the ball on the frame of the receiver and just understanding, like, who you're throwing to. And then Wes had the ability to create separation in a short space. So if you're a shorter player or a smaller player, like, you have something that gives you the opportunity to kind of differentiate yourself from the others. Like, Higgins and Noel are obviously different receivers. They're both productive receivers, and their skill sets are a little bit different, but in some respects, they have some similar qualities. They're able to create a little bit of space against tight covers. Ultimately, it comes down to your ability to create some space versus tight coverage. So how that, I would say, develops and evolves over time, we'll find out. There'll be some nuance involved. There's a coaching element involved. So there's a lot of things that go into being, you know, a good player. And if you have maybe an area that you're deficient, what do you have on the other side of it that you can help offset? And I'd say that applies to really all players. There's no quote-unquote perfect player. They all have things that they can work on. They all have things that they can improve. And each player just has to try to maximize whatever they have to the best of their ability.
Nick, we sort of have an unofficial award on this show at the beginning of training camp. We gave it to Will Anderson last year, the Will Anderson body type change trophy that we give out. You know, who put on the most good weight room weight in the offseason, that kind of thing. My hope and prediction for this year is that trophy goes to Blake Fisher. How is Blake's offseason going, and how are you feeling about him going into year two?
Can we give it to D'Amico? I mean,
yeah, dude.
Seen him in the weight room lately.
He looks like he's put on some good weight room weight also. D'Amico.
I said this the other day. He would definitely beat my ass, so I'll try to avoid. But no, he looks good. Blake looks good. He's been here. I'll give you two other players, actually. So Ladarius Henderson has actually sort of reshaped his body. I think nobody's worked harder than LD. I know he lost his whole year last year because he was dealing with the foot injuries, but I think he's lost, 15 to 20 pounds of body fat. And he wasn't like a heavy kid to begin with. It was just he wasn't able to do a lot. But I would say the level of commitment and focus that he's shown, I mean, honest to God, it's a tremendous accomplishment. And I would say just looking at Kamari, he looks physically in his upper body a little bigger, a little thicker. That's what I'd say off-season program is for. And if you have an opportunity, as a player, you have an opportunity from February to April to really make some progress. In the end, this all goes back to work. What's your level of commitment? How committed are you to being a good football player? What's your level of want to? And there's no substitute for hard work. Not to oversimplify it. This goes back to the blockout example. It goes back to hard work, discipline, consistent, focused work. And I would say those are some players at this point that have shown that. We have a number of players that have done that. I think phase one, the voluntary program, we had 93%, 94%, 95% of the team that was here. So the most important thing is, if you want to improve as a football player, how do you get better at football? You focus on your work and your individual development. And this is just really a starting point. It's only May. You still have May, June, July, and even when we're not here over the summer, those 4 to 6 weeks are vitally important. So a lot of players that have made a lot of progress to this point. Hopefully they continue to make it over the course of the spring.
Nick Figgy's real quick. Nick Figgy's mad at you for bringing up the Cavs. He's a big Cavs fan, and he just texted me.
We're both from Cleveland.
Yeah, I know.
They've had a great year, but learn how to block out after a free throw, man.
Come on now.
Is there anybody or any of the undrafted rookie free agents, guys that, I always like to adopt a UDFA per year. And then Sean writes them down and remembers them for me. Cause I'm a horrible adopted.
Football parent.
I forget these kids. Yeah. They don't make the team.
He's a deadbeat football parent, Nick.
Is there a guy we should be keeping an eye on, perhaps, that you feel just has something to him?
It's a smaller group, but we feel like there's a couple guys in there to have an opportunity to potentially compete for some reps. I would say Tafuna, the defensive tackle from Utah, done some decent things, 6'3", 300 pounds. Good playing style, has some toughness to him, really good kid. And the receiver from Minnesota, I know, probably be an uphill battle there, but Jackson, he had a really good career. He kind of falls into the football player category. Maybe didn't run fast relative to some others, but really productive with his opportunities. He did a good job this year and then in years past as well. So those are a couple guys. I think we signed, what it was, 6 or 7, whatever it was, a smaller group. So hopefully those players come in here and that's all we ask them to do is compete and just try to create a little bit of a niche for themselves. But, excited for the group that's going to come in here tomorrow.
I was thinking, Nick, when we brought you on this morning at 7:30, I was thinking I can ask Nick if he's had a little downtime now that the draft is over. But, of course, you got the rookies coming in. And then there's this reminder that really GMs never sleep because there's a trade that gets announced at 5:45 this morning with the Cowboys, Pickens going to the Cowboys or whatever. I'm not going to ask you about that trade, but in general, is yours a 24-hour job? Can a trade – what's the weirdest time of night where you've ever consummated a deal?
Yeah, it's continued. I'd say free agency sometimes when crazy things happen.
Yeah.
I've been in a situation laying on a couch, you're trying to go to bed, and your phone starts ringing at 1 o'clock in the morning. It's come on, people. let's deal with this tomorrow.
Yeah.
Look, the reality is the role is continuous. You just kind of transition from one phase to the next. We finished up Saturday. Sunday, it was, you know, an off day, if you will. And then honestly, Monday, Tuesday, right after the draft, it felt like those 2 days were as busy as the week before. It's just kind of a different focus and attention in what you're working on. So our opportunity for sort of downtime comes over the summer. Like once we finish up with the mandatory mini camp, then there'll kind of be a little bit of a break league wide. Then that's the opportunity to really unwind and definitely try to take advantage of that. But I mean, that's the beauty of this job. So you're always kind of prepared for anything. And, you know, you try to be smart with your time, try to be efficient, try to maximize the day, and get as much out of it as you possibly can. So there'll be some things, I'm sure, that'll pop up here, at least from our perspective as well, team-wise. I mean, there might be an opportunity for us to add a player or two that we feel like would have a decent role. So that's part of the job. And, you know, you have to embrace that and you have to understand it. And we have a great staff around us. So enjoy every aspect of it. And there's really no quote unquote downtime. It's just kind of, you shift the focus to a different area of work. And that's kind of where we are here in the offseason.
As long as they don't interrupt you while you're watching McAfee versus Gunther on Saturday night, right?
That's Saturday night. Okay. Yeah. How do we think that's going to go?
McAfee
is the scriptwriters think on that one.
Well, you know, you can actually get action on this, Nick. I don't know if you knew that, but McAfee is a plus 800.
I'm not allowed to get action.
Plus 800. You're not, but I can. Plus 800. He's a plus 800 underdog in this thing against Gunther.
Okay. All right. He might have a shot.
He might. I don't know.
Past Pat, so.
Gunther's a tough cat, man.
That sleeper hold, like, he looked like he took that one pretty well a week or so ago, whatever it was.
He did. Seth, you should see McAfee wrestle. He's actually really, really good. He's wrestling in a match.
Good athlete, yeah. He'll tell you. Yeah, I mean,
didn't
really
he get put in a sleeper
athlete?
Hold? Yeah. Then he was doing his show the next day, so like
he was able to recover from the sleeper. Yes, I like that, Nick. That you treat these wrestling injuries like they're real. God, he got up off the mat and he did his show the next day. I love that.
Really like Edelman in that regard. Yeah,
that's it. All right, Nick. Well, we'll see you out there at practice on what, Friday and Saturday this week, right? The rookies are out there.
Can't wait. Look forward to seeing you guys. Thanks for having us. Always enjoy it.
Always enjoy the time. Appreciate it, Nick. Thanks.
Thanks, guys.
Yep. Good stuff. Nick Caserio, Texans GM. All right. He gave us some stuff to sink our teeth into. How about the players? How about Ladarius Henderson popping up on the radar at the end of that interview right there?
You know what? Ladarius Henderson, we've probably under-discussed him as a wild card factor in the O-line race just because he's a seventh-round pick. You know, obviously had a very good college career at Michigan. Has this dual-foot injury.
He got cut and came back. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he got cut, came back. He's intriguing. I should at least mention him more often.
Yeah.
I'm not banking on him for multiple reasons. And there's intrigue there, and a lot of people are curious about it.
Yep.
You know what? And it's not Ladarius Henderson's fault. It's all the people that will come to me and say, hey, he was an All-American on a national championship team. We're like, yeah, so are a lot of guys that never play in the NFL at all. Yeah. So that's not his fault that people bring that up. It's people being stupid about college awards and being on a national championship team.
Yep.
You know what that really bothers me, Sean?
Why?
We had a guy, it was like in 2003 or 2004, he had won a national championship at LSU, or however the asterisks on that one went. And but he was like the sixth defensive tackle on the depth chart there.
Yeah.
He was basically signed as an undrafted free agent, as a favor to somebody on the team, like as a kind of like, yeah, here we go. Or somebody on the team granted him a favor, cause his dad was somebody. This kid walked around the locker room wearing his national championship ring.
No.
And And he was awful. He was awful. Awful.
Dude, even if he was good, that violates the rules of wearing your national championship ring.
No. He was bad in every, like, horrible personality, horrible football player. Was on the team as a favor to the guy's daddy or uncle or something.
Right.
Just to be able to say that he was in a camp somewhere.
Yeah. But even
if he was it'd be like if a Heisman Trophy winner came strolling into the locker room with his Heisman Trophy. Like, okay, you actually did something, but what the hell are you doing?
Yeah. Yeah, because those rings are, like, once you get them, those are special occasion only type of things. You don't walk around, like, going to the grocery store with your Super Bowl or national championship ring on, right?
I don't know. That's probably up to the individual. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. No, I just... But it's
a nice trinket to have out leaning on the bar, you know, if you're a young single guy.
Yeah, like, what should the rules be about wearing your national championship ring around? That's what I want to know.
Of all the ways to peacock at a bar, I would say
that's pretty good.
That's an acceptable that's one a, and it pretty that, sets you apart. Yeah.
That's a really good one. That's a really good one for sure. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. That was Texans GM Nick Caserio. If you missed the interview, you've got the Rewind feature and the podcast. to go find it. We always appreciate how generous he is with his time. All right, so let's circle back. There were a couple things I jotted down that I want to revisit with Nick, and a couple of them have to do with the offensive line. So we will do that. I'm sure you'll hear bits and pieces of that interview on the station throughout the show the rest of the day as well. Stay there. You're listening to Payne and Pendergast.
Dollar Shave Club delivers premium razors without premium prices. Get close, comfortable six-blade shaves, swift rinse and four blades for thicker hair, and translucent shave butter for precision. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun. Use promo code HOMERUN for 20% off.
Baseball's number one digital destination is the MLB app. And this app's got game. Like game highlights, live games, fantasy games, and more.
The gem of a game!
This is baseball your way. With stats, scores, breaking news, and daily custom content that hits every time.
A monster shot!
Because here, you choose the teams and pick the players you want to follow.
All year long.
So when they catch it on the field,
what a catch!
You catch it on the MLB app. Download today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Podcasting isn't just evolving. It's having a full-blown identity crisis. I'm Allison Marino, host of What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined, a new series that pulls back the curtain on the forces shaping the medium now and what that means for all of us who love podcasts. I'm really excited to share the official trailer where you'll hear from some of the biggest names in the space. Ira Glass, Leo Laporte, Guy Raz, Hernan Lopez, Lex Fridman, AJ Feliciano, Dan Granger, and yeah, me too. Here it is now.
I still want to kill the word podcast.
That's not just a hot take. It's a symptom of an identity crisis.
Big company run media, and people are trusting it less and less. It's really important that we're independent.
There's a handful of companies that control the vast majority of podcast inventory that have the vast majority of the gigantic shows.
We left radio behind for a reason. We wanted to get away from all the gatekeepers.
I don't know that you could do this as effectively in video.
Podcasting is at a crossroads. I've watched the industry swing from hype to consolidation to reinvention. But this time it's different. From the producers of the documentary Age of Audio, Oxford Road presents the Media Roundtable special series. What's a podcast? The Revolution Redefined.
All of us who work in the media, like, yeah, we got to run a business and like, we got to make a living and we got to sell our ads and we got to do all that. But we all got into it because like, I think most of us, like, it just gave us a feeling.
A three-part series where you'll hear the leading industry voices give their takes on what podcasting has become and where it's headed next. Teaming up with Oxford Road and Age of Audio director Sean Colon for this series was fun, but also kind of a wake-up call. If you love this medium as much as I do, you've got to listen to What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined. It's out now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Hey, I'm Josh Fink, owner of Nick's Menswear. Getting married? Don't rent some random suit. At Nick's, we help you own the look for about the same price as a rental. You're marrying the love of your life. Don't you deserve a suit that's yours forever? Nick's Menswear, your friend in style.